Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome to the New Books Network. I'm Pierre Laurencin. Today I'm speaking with Tom Hollard, who is the author of Knowledge Beside Itself, Contemporary Arts Epistemic Politics, which was published by Stenberg Press in 2020. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
The book is an incredibly ambitious dive into what seems to me to be an important but underexplored set of dynamics that shape contemporary art. But before we get into the specifics, it would be great if you could describe how you got into this topic, given that you were an art historian and a cultural theorist to start. Our listeners may perhaps know you as a co-founder of the Harun Farokiev Institute or from your work in the Vienna Academy of Fine Arts. How have these experiences built to the research which you present in the book?
I actually started to be interested in this particular relationship rather early on. In my PhD work, which I've been working on in the early 1990s, I tried to make sense of the way in which artistic competence had been defined and had been codified in 18th century and early 19th century France. As an art historian, I tried to move into history to find out more about the ways in which artistic knowledge had been addressed and had been allocated to particular personalities or ideas of personalities, particular subjectivities, which were linked or which were somehow associated with art, artisthood, early scenes of Bohemia, etc. The ensuing work, the book, Künstlerwissen, Artistic Knowledge, was actually the starting point and a constant kind of reference point also for me to come back to and sometimes surprising ways or sometimes unexpected ways, since I didn't really expect me to be again and again in the times and the years and decades after finishing this work to be engaged with this particular question. And as you mentioned already in your introduction, when I was employed at the Academy of Fine Arts in Vienna, I was a professor for the epistemology and methodology of art, rather pompous title for a post which had been created in a way to develop and then to implement a PhD in practice, an artistic PhD in practice that would in a way supplement the offers the Academy had in terms of art theory and research-related art practices, and also to become part of an emerging field, an emerging landscape of artistic research in the higher education in the arts in Europe at the time. In the development of this particular course, I was constantly reminded of my own work, art historical work, on the question of artistic knowledge.
The artistic PhD is indeed one of the protagonists that you use in the book, and it is perhaps one of the ways in which our listeners may be able to conceptualize the relationship between art and research, and therefore between art and knowledge. But in the book, you also set out to deal with a range of much more substantial and much more fundamental aspects of what it may mean for art to be involved in epistemology.
The very fact that we are here to talk about contemporary art in its relation to knowledge is nothing to be taken for granted, really. It's actually quite a specialist subject area. It's not something to be necessarily known to a general audience that there's within contemporary art something going on that might be called, as I am doing it in the introduction of the book, the knowledgeization or epistemization of art. What I'm trying to do is to make a point, is to make a proposal with regard to the very impact or import the notion of knowledge had and still has in the realm of the contemporary visual arts. But before I'm going into this, I would like to clarify a few key concepts. The one at first is contemporary art itself. What are we speaking about when I'm speaking of contemporary art? For me, contemporary art is not a particular style or particular modality of artistic practice. It is rather a globally networked formation of institutions, ideologies, individual actors and protagonists, but also corporate actors and protagonists, as well as cultural administrations, governments, and all kinds of kind of public sector actors that are part of this globally expanding formation. This formation of contemporary art has been specifically organized around large-scale exhibitions, large-scale institutions such as museums, often franchise enterprises acting transnationally, of art educational institutions, and of the art market, of course. And there's a certain understanding of art that is being promoted by this formation of contemporary art that is not to be confused with or identified with the contemporary art of which I'm speaking here. The contemporary art which I'm speaking of is really this kind of clustered, highly densely entangled mix of institutional and individual actors. So what I'm saying is, when it comes to knowledge, is that this formation of contemporary art is in itself a kind of factory, a kind of plant where knowledge is being produced on constantly. And this knowledge is of very different scale and very heterogeneous in character. It can be the knowledge produced by the individual artist in her or his research being done for a particular artwork, but it can and is also the knowledge produced by algorithms organizing the institutional and corporate mechanisms that lead to the production of these kind of large-scale exhibitions such as biennials or to auction events or to art fairs or to gallery events, etc. So there's a knowledge being involved in maintaining and expanding this formation of contemporary art, as well as there's a knowledge being involved on the level of artistic practices, individual artistic practices or collective artistic practices that lead to certain artworks, to performances, to installations, to exhibitions, etc. The important thing, I think, to emphasize is that one shouldn't mix up these two levels of knowledge production. And I'm not even sure if we can speak of two levels. There are probably much more. And still, when we are talking about knowledge production, and I'm doing this in my book as well, we are mostly referring to the knowledge being produced by artists. And of course, this is an important and crucial dimension of knowledge production with regard to the arts, but it is not the only one. And I think it needs to be constantly contextualized within this larger formation of contemporary art being this kind of mammoth epistemic factory. When I'm speaking about the knowledge production happening in art, in particular artworks, through particular artworks, in their relation or in their kind of interaction with the audience and with institutional players, etc., then I'm thinking here of certain types of investigative and research-based art that have become more and more dominant throughout the past 3 to 4 decades. One of the emblematic ways of doing knowledge in this respect is, for example, to work with and within archives. Another way or another type of knowledge being produced is the one based on methodologies of documentary filmmaking or documentary research being done in the social realm, in the anthropological realm, in the biological realm, or wherever. So just to leave it with these two examples, the archival, the studying of the archival, the criticism of the archival, the building of new and alternative archives is one way of engaging with knowledge and with certain ideas and ideologies of knowledge, certain epistemologies that artists have been very keen in doing. And the other mode or modality would be the documentary that can lead to kind of straightforward documentaries in the tradition of the documentary filmmaking, but can also turn into highly fictionalized, highly freewheeling kinds of meta documentaries that are not that don't resemble much earlier notions or earlier ideas of what a documentary or what a documentation is to be. But both activities, archiving or the study of the archive and documenting or the study of documentation, are being at the forefront of a new knowledge-based modality of art production that has become almost emblematic for the entire field.
Well, it seems like you have just turned this beautiful phrase of a mammoth epistemic factory to describe what aspects of contemporary art may have become. But I wonder if I could ask you to take an equally mammoth historic run-up to this and try to trace some of the developments of art alongside the various branches of knowledge which we associate with epistemology much more readily.
In a certain perspective, art and knowledge have never been separated. They've always been very closely linked, and you can trace this back into classic art, the art of the antique, but especially, of course, the Renaissance art at later stages of art history, where a certain kind of knowledge, certain kind of erudite knowledge also was to be expected from visual artists and painters, sculptors, but also and especially, for example, architects and engineers who've been considered to be artists as well. And in the course of the Enlightenment and then the advent of modernism and in art, there was a desire of bringing from an interest in differentiation, in creating autonomous spheres within culture and within society at large, that made it more and more plausible and more natural almost to consider art as something that is not to be identified with something like science. With the foundation of first modern art academies, or art academies in the sense, in the modern sense, in the 17th century, was increasingly considered as something to be seen under different auspices and under different terms than other practices and other areas of knowledge production. And therefore, artists became suspicious once they were displaying knowledge which was considered to be outside of the sphere of art. And if they're conspicuously performed as erudites within the academy and outside of the academy, they were often enough relegated to their place as artists proper. This tendency has, in a way, continued far into the 20th century and until today, since artists are considered to be, in the popular ideas circulating around art, are considered and portrayed as not particularly knowledgeable, not particularly intellectual, not particularly bright. They are as creative subjects. They were placed in a realm of less cognitive and much more emotive or emotional ways of being productive. And therefore, artists have been, as the famous saying says, often considered to be bête comme un peintre, stupid like a painter or as a painter, and not being given the privilege of becoming part of a world where scientists, academics, etc., and intellectuals are moving. This is not a plain story, and there are a lot of exceptions to it, of course. But it could be said that until the 1960s or around the 1960s, artists who also who were also interested in non-artistic ways of knowing, scientific ways of knowing and reflection were in a way relegated outside of the art world. But with the 1960s and with the advent of late and postmodernism and this peculiar thing called conceptual art, a new sense or new image of the artist emerged that in a way had moved much closer to the realm of the thinking person, so to speak.
The 20th century is indeed very much the historical background of the book, and it reveals a whole spectrum of possibilities for art to be engaged in epistemic production. On the one hand, you refer to the Russian constructivist and productivist movements of the 1920s, but it is the much later occasion of Documenta 11 in 2002, curated by Ockwin Wezert, that becomes a turning point in a certain epistemic economy of art.
Documenta 11 was indeed a turning point with regard to the kind of language used to in a way organize and direct, newly direct the relationship between art and knowledge, art and research, art and thinking. And knowledge production, the very term, is a rather recent term. At the time, it was first coined in the late 1950s, early 1960s, in a discipline that might be called knowledge sociology or sociology of knowledge, with a close, strong interest in economy. And from this sociologist, economicist realm of science, it in a way migrated into other spheres, and art and contemporary art were one of those kind of destinies of the knowledge production trope. And the very notion wasn't much known at the time in art circles, or it wasn't really commonly used. And it was a very interesting move by Ockwin Wezert and his curatorial team to introduce this notion of knowledge production into a discourse which might have had a certain idea of what concept art, conceptual art, and concepts and knowledge in a more general sense might be, but not so much in this idea of the artist as a knowledge producer. And this very idea, this very notion of knowledge production, then also could be related back to an earlier, as you mentioned, an earlier stage in the history of art, in particular the productivist times of the Soviet 1920s, the post-revolutionary idea of integrating art into the social production at large, into the making it part of the industrial revolutionary process. And the reputation of productivism as being something that brings or that could bring art into the social in an unprecedented way was something that obviously seemed interesting to or attractive to the curatorial team of Documenta 11. Although I would suspect that they weren't that much behind an idea of a neo-productivist turn in the arts, I think knowledge production was also used rather loosely in some respect at that in the early 2000s. But it became more and more interestingly or differently used in the years that followed, and up to the point that knowledge production and art seemed almost identical or not to be separated or separable any longer. And how this could happen is something I'm trying to render, to map in the book.
This emergence of knowledge production as a key domain of art that you just described, it seems to coincide with what eventually appeared to be the rise of global knowledge economy. I imagine that this isn't quite an accident.
One of the key interests and points of the book is to render more palpable than it had been done before, in my view at least, the way in which art, contemporary art, is actively involved in the composition and production of contemporary knowledge systems and knowledge economies. It seems to be easy to locate art at the margins, at the sidelines of more general tendencies of knowledge in contemporary societies. But I'm trying to venture that artists has actually moved more and more center stage and has become a vital agent in the way contemporary knowledge is being shaped and formed. There are not that many empirical data to prove this idea, but I don't attempt this in the book. But there is, in the way art is being featured, is publicized, is being talked about, mediated in also more mainstream media, is more and more related to the way in which art is in global exhibitions such as the Venice Biennial or the already mentioned Documenta, is trying to make sense of the world in a different way than the sciences do, than journalism does, but is at the same time moving ever closer to these very realms of science and journalism and documentary, etc. This is, in a way, a double movement between the attempt to cling to the exceptional status, the exceptional nature of art with regard to other kinds of knowledge, and to, at the same time, make it a collaborator, sometimes a competitor, sometimes an assistant of other seemingly more established modes of knowing and thinking. But in the process, art is informing the existing knowledge scapes, the knowledge landscapes, in ways that I think need closer scrutiny. And this is what I'm trying to do in the course of these case studies that are at the center of each of the chapters of the book. So the claim is to make palpable art as a vital agent of contemporary knowledge, politics, and economies.
Well, I think the next question that arises is how one could develop these new levels of scrutiny and introspection that you suggest, introspection into art's relationship to knowledge, given in particular the fact that contemporary art almost unavoidably draws on various notions of subjectivity, such as those that are suggested by Foucault's ideas of power knowledge and a plethora of critical theories that follow.
Art's relation to subjectivity seems to be the most obvious and the most rehearsed dimension of modernist art in particular. There's, since Romanticism, there's no way around the author subject, the artist subject, to be at the center of the interest and the center of the very production of meaning that can then be beholden or received, read or viewed in the artwork. However, there has always been an objective side to the kinds of knowledges transpiring through or into the artwork. There's, of course, a determining, a conditioning environment of knowledge in society that artists move in the same or similar way as other subjects do, scientists, for example. And therefore, art isn't in any ways independent of more general trends, more general tendencies, and general structures of knowledge. There is always an imprint of a more general idea or general epistemic condition in works of art to be perceived. And this imprint, of course, is not at all historically stable, but is changing, and therefore it need to be interpreted, it need to be assessed time again and again. And one of the kind of major motivations behind my interest in this art knowledge compound in the present is, of course, to better understand, to better know how a more general condition of knowledge and knowledge production is present or is being mediated in particular artworks and but also in artistic practices, also collective practices, and how this mediation is leading to a specific kind of knowledge or specific kind of knowledges that may be or may not be that different from other kinds of knowledges produced elsewhere, for example, in the sciences.
I guess that one of the things that happens at the very comparison between artistic knowledge production and scientific modes of discovery is that it creates a set of pressures on art to conform to preconceived ideas and standards that art may not have realized it was getting itself into.
There is a certain tendency to expect from artists in this function as knowledge producers to produce new knowledge and new knowledges. And this idea of new knowledge of innovation is, of course, one that needs to be taken with some skepticism or with some prudence, as I would suspect that this is a rather easy way to apply a certain idea of progress onto the arts that is not necessarily to be expected from an artist or from an artistic practice. Although there is, of course, every reason to believe that there's something is happening in the arts and in specific artworks that might be called new. But whether this is a kind of a knowledge that should be considered as new in the same way as scientific knowledge is to be questioned. Being part of a more general knowledge economy, and this is what I'm trying to make sense of in the book, is, of course, coming with certain expectations with regard to art being a place where new knowledge is, innovation is being found. But there is also back and forth movement. The ideas of creativity, of closely associated with the arts, have been, in a way, been appropriated by the knowledge economies at large and have been implemented into their own definitions of success and failure, of progress and regress. So there's, in a way, the kind of expectations of innovation that are being projected onto contemporary art are coming from the arts originally and are being, in a way, relayed through contemporary knowledge economies back to art, where they are doing a certain kind of job in raising expectations with regard to the kind of tasks or to the kind of performances expected from artists.
What you describe is perhaps a push and pull of progress and resistance, and artists themselves can take on complex productive or counterproductive positions in this. And one of the exciting aspects of the book for me is that it draws on quite a range of case studies to illustrate some of the possibilities and indeed problem that artists encounter.
Yes, one of the artists that have been very early on sensitized to the issue of artistic research as a paradigm, as a game changer in contemporary art was Natasha Zadra-Agigian, an Iranian-German artist based in Berlin, who has been the artist representing Germany in the 2019 Venice Art Biennial. And Natasha Zadra-Agigian is both very explicit and very engaged with regard to the notion of research as she is addressing this particular term, this particular concept straight on. In 2010, for example, at a talk at the MACBA in Barcelona, she's speaking about artistic research as a new way of controlling the way in which artists think and produce, a new set of criteria applied to contemporary artists that change the way artists perceive their own practice, particularly when they are dependent on, for example, jobs at art schools and art educational institutions. Once art is being conceived in terms of research, there's also an outcome expected, a research outcome and a result of the research being conducted. And this particular constellation of having a research question, doing the research and then presenting the result of the research, for example, in a so-called research exhibition, is something that is kind of reformatting and reorganizing the way in which artists think and act quite considerably. Natasha had been both endorsing this new paradigm of research as she's considering herself as a researcher, quite self-consciously as such. But at the same time, she's not interested in fulfilling any role being imposed on her by a new institutional setting that is looking for different ways of organizing and managing art under the rubrum, under the sign of research. What she's particularly skeptical about, and she's not the only one at that, is that the research being now expected from artists is of the same kind as the research being done at the research university in sciences, that art is becoming more and more subject to quantification and measurement. The way in which artistic achievement is being judged is moving closer and closer to the ways scientific achievement is being judged. These developments, some of them only rumors in a way, but many of them quite palpable in the institution, have been worrying artists who not necessarily reject the notion of research, but want to have it understood in a different way on their own terms.
Well, the narrative of art as a unit of knowledge generation that is somehow in conversation with other types of knowledge produced in the academy is perhaps more or less comprehensible to those of our listeners who may have observed the ongoing absorption of what used to be autonomous art schools into wider traditional university structures. But the next case study, which I'd like to ask you about, complicates this field even further by introducing a commercial, the corporate idea of knowledge and knowledge labor.
Yes, Pilvi Takala, a Finnish video and performance artist who is often inserting herself into situations, into environments that can be considered corporate or institutional, has used this work, The Trainee, as a way to demonstrate how certain behavioral modes can be perceived as more or less acceptable in such corporate environments. She was indeed hired as a trainee to do the research at Deloitte, this consulting company, a global player that is seeing itself as being one of the most efficient corporations in its domain. And she, the artist, is doing something that on the surface may be not that different from what everyone else is doing in the office, but that at some point started to look suspicious even to her co-workers, who are essentially doing the same thing, sitting at their desks, staring at the screen, and working mentally or with their brains, reading, writing, thinking. And the way in which the person just sitting there doing nothing is to be distinguished from the person sitting there doing something is the artistic proposition Takala is doing here. She's at the same time reflecting on the condition of immaterial labor in an office environment, while also reflecting on her position as an artist being placed into such an environment in the tradition of earlier artist placements in industrial or other economical basis. She's also meditating on the way in which time becomes an element of her work, that the very temporality of her performance is becoming a formal device of the final work. So there's a lot going on here without addressing epistemology or knowledge or cognition straight on. Takala, nonetheless, has been very successful in this work to riff on these very small differences between someone working within art and being an artist and someone working outside art. The non-distinction, the non-distinguishability of art, artist and non-artist, was one of the key subjects of this particular work.
Well, this is indeed a work that I'm very fond of, and I think it's successful in exposing the somewhat vacuous or baseless nature of the broader knowledge economy. And we'll put a link to the video in the show notes, and I highly recommend this piece to our listeners. I wonder, however, whether there isn't an immediate flip side to this indictment that Takala extends to the corporation. That is, whether art isn't just as readily drawn in by the performance of knowledge, of research, and of cognition.
Yes, exactly. This is how I would put it as well. But I think from this apparent seamlessness of art economies and knowledge economies, the art world and the office world, certain challenges or certain tasks emerge. There is, I think, for the arts in the knowledge-based polis, an urgent need to reflect on this particular seamlessness. I think it's only a first step to state that art has become part of the knowledge economy at large, that art is being implemented or implicated in global knowledge industries to an extent that hasn't been reached at any time before. But there's also, in a second step, I think the quest the need to define what critical art should do with this predicament. And I would propose that art needs to be engaged much more than it has done before in a politics of knowledge, or what I call in the subtitle of the book, epistemic politics. And so the question, of course, is what such a politics should look like or could look like.
Well, I think it would perhaps be unfair to ask any author who has engaged in such in-depth analysis to also offer a solution to the problem they highlight. But I think you develop in the book a very strong argument for art to internalize the wider problems of what is sometimes referred to as a broader epistemic crisis.
I think the politics starts at that moment. This implication of art into the knowledge economy is not only recognized, but also taken as something that needs to be or should be changed or needs to be addressed in ways that might lead to an overcoming of this of the present situation. That art is not just simply kind of fulfill certain tasks within this larger machinery of knowledge production, but is becoming a kind of resistant, disobedient force that is kind of constantly working at the subversion and the transformation of this situation. And in order to do that, art has to become more and more aware of what it is moving into or what it has moved into already. In order to do this, it needs to have a stronger notions of the epistemic politics available outside of the art world or developed in a certain vicinity to the contemporary art worlds, but not within it as such. I'm thinking of feminist epistemologies, standpoint epistemologies, queer epistemologies, black epistemologies, indigenous epistemologies, and other ways of kind of confronting and relativizing the dominance and hegemony of Western knowledge systems. And there's, I think, great acceptance or willingness within contemporary art to take on these kind of critical epistemologies from outside of the art world. But as much as the interest, or as great as the interest might be, coming from artists, coming from curators, coming from institutions, there is also great need to be more careful and more scrupulous when it comes to applying these critical epistemologies to art itself. But in the process, I think, of applying critical epistemologies onto or grafting them onto contemporary art practices, the ideas we have of artistic practice are already changing and are already becoming something else, which we have to consider in order to become more succinct when it comes to define what a knowledge politics with regard to art may be.
Well, you certainly make a compelling argument for this kind of engagement, and where I think the book reads as an optimistic manifesto within what is a very complex field. Are those moments where you propose just exactly how art could engage with those external epistemic methods and politics? Well, you close the book with one such example of how the idea of a knowledge commons could look like when deployed within contemporary art.
Yes, I think art needs to be in close contact with all those movements and tendencies that are working towards a more just, more equal, more democratic system of knowledge in general. This may be sounding a bit too easy in terms of how art is then becoming the handmaid of a certain politics that is then losing all of its specifics in terms of formal and aesthetic qualities, for example. But I'd still would say art should or could, or, no, art should, I'd say, be part of a struggle for more democratic distribution of accesses to knowledge and education. The commons have been a subject or a theme, a concern within contemporary art worlds for quite some time now. This is, of course, not necessarily a central concern for the art world at large, but for many alternative self-organized spaces of art and art education, the commons have been a kind of constant conceptual challenge in the past 10 or 20 years or so, parallel to a rediscovery of the commons in economic sciences and political science and anarchist studies, etc. And therefore, the commons seem to be also a platform or a template to speak of knowledge to be commonized or waiting to be commonized in to a much larger extent than it has happened already. Knowledge commons, of course, is something that is being pursued very successfully and very engagedly by popular knowledge movements such as the People Knowledge Movement in India, where knowledge is being conceived in terms that are different from the industrialized and corporatized ways of knowledge that have monopolized also the language and the meaning of and the semantics of knowledge to a large extent. And this struggle is something that art, that many artists seem to sympathize with, and I do myself as well. And I think art can, once it has become aware of its own role and own power also in terms of changing knowledge environments and knowledge conditions, can become a strong political partner in these struggles for epistemic justice. One of the central targets, of course, is the notion of property and intellectual property and knowledge being a commodity that can be traded easily. And once art is acknowledging its own commodity status and is ready to fight it or ready to change it, there's also a way to decommodify knowledge, and by building bridges between different strands of decommodifying processes. In particular, I'm referring here to the cultural critic and theorist Leigh-Claire LaBerge, who had written a great book on decommodification in the arts, Wages Against Artworks, where she's proposing to move art away from the existing dominant structures of economy into alternative economic environments of bartering, of commonizing, etc. Once these moves are becoming less an exception and more of a rule, so to speak, particularly in times of global crisis around climate and the epidemic, there's a certain chance also to reorganize the particular relationship art had developed towards knowledge in the past 20 or 30 years or so. One of the aims of such a development could be or should be the stronger presence of something that could be called knowledge commons, and in particular, the way in which art provides some of the tools, some of the instruments to gain a better understanding and to gain a sight of what it could mean to share knowledge in ways that are not following the logics and the imperatives of the share economy, for example.
Well, thank you, Tom, for taking us onto this rich and rewarding and indeed optimistic journey. And I wonder, just as a way to close our conversation, if you could tell us about your future plans. Are you planning to stick with the ideas of knowledge and art in your future work?
Yes, I will. I will definitely not lose sight of these questions. However, in the moment, I'm more deeply immersed in an exhibition and research project that was to open in September this year, but had to be postponed at the Haus der Kultur in der Welt in Berlin, a project on the spatial politics of learning and education in the 1960s and 1970s. This is called Education Shock. This is not too far away, actually, from my interests in art as a mode of knowledge production, as it actually emerged out of the research I did into art and education and epistemology, as I at some point registered that the pile of materials pertaining to the spatial dimension of knowledge became higher and higher, and I had to do something with it. And this current project at HKW, which we are hopefully be able to open in mid-February 21, is a second step in the larger research project that started with the exhibition and research project Learning Laboratories at the Basis for Aktuelle Kunst in Utrecht in 2016-17. There's a lot going on with regards to my interests in art and knowledge politics, and I hope I will find ways to think more deeply about the changing conditions of knowledge and epistemology due to the current pandemic. Because there, of course, the questions about expert knowledge, scientific knowledge, or what also already had been called catastrophic epistemology, and the deep crisis of truth, of which someone like the historian Gilles Lepore is speaking, of course, have their effects already and will have in the future on the way art is being conceived and in terms of knowledge and knowledge production and knowledge politics.
Well, it's certainly a time of both potential and anxiety for all of us. Thank you once again, Tom, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the New Books Network podcast. I'm Pierre d'Alencer, and Tom Hollard's Knowledge Beside Itself, Contemporary Art's Epistemic Politics, is out and out, published by Stenbeck Press. Join us again next time.